fake news was a huge presence in last year's election season and since then, too. From made-up news about candidates to fabricated stories in the aftermath of mass shootings, fake news stories have been widely circulated, especially on social media. But what kind of impact do they have, and is it possible to stop them or at least slow down the flow of misinformation? Emily Thorson is an assistant professor of political science at Syracuse University and co-editor of the forthcoming book, Misinformation and Mass Audiences. Emily, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Let's talk about a definition of fake news. We throw the term a lot around for different things. Originally, I thought it meant stuff that people just made up and then circulated online and elsewhere.
That's actually a pretty good definition, and I think it's the one that academics tend to use. So when we talk about fake news, we're usually talking about pieces of content that are deliberately intended to deceive and that are kind of masquerading as real news. So they have headlines on them to make them look like they are true.
And this isn't just political. There's a lot of political fake news, but it gets into a lot of spheres of our lives, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, I am a political scientist, so I tend to study a lot of political fake news. But honestly, especially after editing this book and looking at a lot of different examples of fake news, I think that fake news around health is actually some of the most concerning because it has some of the most direct effects on how we actually behave. So whether that's fake news about vaccinations or something else, that can have direct effects on kind of the choices that we make about our own health, the health of our children.
If I sit back and think about it, I would think in the information ecosystem, if there was a true story and a completely made-up story, there'd be like an evolutionary advantage to the real thing, and the made-up stuff would have a harder time spreading. Obviously, I'm wrong. Why does fake news spread so well?
I don't think you're necessarily wrong, right? I mean, the vast majority of the news that people consume is real news. Right, the fake news still makes up a tiny, tiny minority of the news that people is actually exposed to. But insofar as fake news does spread, it often spreads because it kind of pushes a lot of our buttons, right? The folks who design fake news know exactly, they're designing it often just to get us to click on it because they're trying to make money oftentimes. And the things that get us to click on things and share things are things that arouse our emotions and information that's novel. And fake news has both of those things. It's often, especially in the political world, something that makes us really angry or excited. And it's often something that we haven't heard before because it's made up, obviously. And so those two things both kind of encourage us to both to click on it and share it in a way that sort of real news might not.
And staying in politics here, is it possible to measure the impact that the flow of fake news stories has on political participation, how we vote, that kind of thing?
Well, I think you're asking the right questions. You know, a lot of times when people ask me about did fake news matter, what they mean is did it shape the election, right? And that is certainly an important outcome. Evidence for that is pretty, I would say suggests that it did not have a huge impact on the election itself, mostly because the types of people who are exposed to, you know, let's say a fake news piece saying that Donald Trump was endorsed by the Pope are the people who are already really likely to support Donald Trump. So it likely did not have a big persuasive effect. But I think fake news can have some other effects, right? I mean, you kind of talked about a demobilizing effect. So does fake news potentially being exposed to this sort of thing make people less likely to participate in general? How does it affect trust in media is a really important question. If you continually see things that are later debunked, then maybe you're going to trust all media a little bit less, and that could be potentially really worrisome. We don't necessarily have the answers to that yet. I think researchers are working on that now, but even though misinformation has been a part of the political ecosystem for a long time, this specific format of fake news is relatively new, and so we're still kind of trying to figure out what those effects might be.
Now, we have a lot of fact-checking operations out there. I kind of started, actually, to check statements usually by politicians, but it's definitely branched out into fake news, and you have websites like Snopes trying to debunk online rumors and fake news. Is that a good way to tackle the spread of misinformation?
It can be, I think, especially when you have these fact-checking organizations working in tandem either with mainstream media outlets or with platforms like Facebook. And that's what we're seeing more of. You know, Facebook has introduced this disputed tag to articles that have been fact-checked by organizations like PolitiFact or Snopes so that people have a better sense of when they encounter a headline in the context of social media, whether it has been disputed. The problem is just relying on fact-checking organizations is that people just don't go to those websites very often, right? They don't get a huge amount of traffic. So what works best is when they really work with other news organizations to kind of get those out there. And it's also important to keep in mind that fact-checking organizations serve another purpose, which is to, you know, disincentivize politicians especially from lying. So there's been some really great experimental work looking at what happens when politicians know that fact-checking organizations are watching them, and what happens is that they actually tell fewer lies. So that's a really encouraging finding. Whether that will discourage the purveyors of fake news is another story.
We're talking to Emily Thorson from Syracuse University, co-editor of the upcoming book, Misinformation and Mass Audiences, looking at fake news and how to try to stop it if it can be stopped. And I first came across your work, Emily, in an article about fake news that came out in the aftermath of a mass shooting. And something that seems to happen, I think you talked about this in the story and others did too, is that right after a mass shooting, we know very little. We know very little for a long time. And so there's this gap. People want to know more stuff, and this is a great entry point for fake stories to catch on.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And, you know, even in politics, I think you see some of this just because there's a constant news gap or news hole in politics, right? It's hard for any news organization to keep up with the enormous demand of the public for more and more and more information. And so I think that's something to be really wary of as journalists, is to not just report on the most recent rumor or the most recent thing that you've heard, but instead to take a step back and think about and verify.
You mentioned earlier the creators of fake news having a profit motive. If I can create content that people link to, I can make money. Is that one possible entry point to try to stop the spread of fake news, changing the incentive?
Yeah, it would be tough to do, and I am not an expert in kind of Facebook algorithms, and I think that really is up to Facebook. And you know, we get so much of our news via Facebook right now, and that's how a lot of this fake news is spreading. You know, their system is still really closed. They haven't worked with researchers much to try to address these questions. They're trying some things on their own, but it's not really clear without empirical testing which ones are going to make a difference.
We in the media look at social media a lot, try to keep up with the latest developments and news stories. Do you think that makes us overestimate the effect of fake news and things that spread on social media when maybe the public isn't as attached to it as we are?
Yes. I actually talk about this a lot with my students in my political science class. You know, I tell them over and over again, you're different. You're different and you're weird, right? Most people, it's not that they're paying attention to fake news. It's just they're not paying attention to any news. The amount of news that someone gets in their Facebook feed, this is hard news, I think it's about maybe, I think 8% of the content in their news feed is actually hard news. So very little of what they're seeing in their Facebook feed is news at all. And then a much smaller percentage of that is fake news. And I understand why we get so worked up about fake news. It can seem frustrating and scary, but the reality is, you're exactly right, that most people just aren't paying that much attention to this.
Now, for people who are consumers of news, maybe via social media, do you have any thoughts or advice on how to up our detectors of fake news to try to spot or at least check out something before we believe it, maybe even spread it ourselves?
Well, the two guidelines that I would give to people who are sort of more media savvy are, first, to don't be afraid to shame other people for spreading fake news. So if you see somebody spreading an unverified rumor on Twitter or on Facebook, call them out on it. I think this kind of enforcement of social norms is going to do a lot of good in stopping the spread of fake news. The second thing I would say is to be wary of spreading something just in order to correct it. So if you see that, you know, Donald Trump says something that is wildly false and you want to retweet that and say, can you believe that he said this false thing, maybe hold back on that. Because the problem is that it's hard to sort of unring that bell of misinformation, that when people are exposed to the misinformation, even in the context of it being corrected, it can still have kind of lingering effects on attitudes. So better to just not spread it at all, even if your motives are pure.
Getting back to that shame concept, Emily, this is maybe more of an etiquette question, maybe outside of your main research area. But, you know, I've had relatives on both sides of the political spectrum spread fake news and thought about correcting them. And, you know, how do you approach that with somebody you want to sit down for, you know, Thanksgiving dinner with next year?
My approach or my suggestion is to congratulate them on what they are doing that's good, which is engaging in the political process, right? So, you know, telling them that you are impressed by the fact that they are caring enough to read political news, to share political news, that puts them in a minority of Americans already, and that is empirically a good thing. But then follow that with kind of the chaser of, but this isn't actually true. It might help to share a time that you've been fooled by fake news so they don't feel like you're calling them stupid, right? So say, this can happen to anybody. You know, I shared this thing that turned out to be false the other day. Sort of do whatever you can to take the blame off of them and not make them feel stupid for falling victim to this.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Emily, is this a hard topic to research given how quickly social media technology, for example, changes? The thing you're studying today may not even be the platform people use in 2 years?
Yes and no. I mean, if you think about testing specific interventions, I think that can be tough, but the basics of how humans process information aren't really changing. And we have in communications and political science some really great theories and evidence about how people process information, and those fundamental rules aren't really changing much. So we can use these theories that we've developed over the past 20 years or so to, I think, understand how people are processing information in a new media environment as well.
Emily, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Emily Thorson, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Syracuse University, co-editor of the forthcoming book, Misinformation and Mass Audiences.